Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Hello again on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson here in Tucson, Arizona. And in the studio I have with me Susan Bassard from the Reed Park Zoo. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. It's a delight to be here.
Well, but I know you're giving up being at a very important birthday party at the zoo. What's going on today?
Well, today is our tiger's birthday, and we're actually having a big cat birthday party. It's probably winding up right about now, but I'm sure it was lots of fun. The kids were able to join in and present gifts, if you will, big boxes with meat.
I love it.
To the tigers, and I'm sure it was lots of fun.
That's great. Well, let me introduce Susan. It's a pleasure to have her again. Susan Bassard has been the director of the Reed Park Zoo for the past 15 years, as well as involved in education curator. Prior to that, she started her animal business career, she calls it, as a zookeeper at the Bronx Zoo in 1973, affiliated with the Children's Zoo there and their education department. After 13 years, in 1986, she left the zoo to do field research with leatherback sea turtles in the Virgin Islands for 5 years before then coming to Tucson with her husband, who is a herpetologist affiliated with the University of Arizona. Susan has an undergraduate degree in English from Hood College and 3 master's degrees, education from Banks State College of Education, biology from Fordham University, and business from the University of Phoenix. At the Reed Park Zoo, which is owned and managed by the City of Tucson, Susan's focus has been on increasing the educational and interactive opportunities for zoo guests, as well as continual assessment and improvement of the animal facilities and the staff opportunities. So 15 years, how has the zoo changed during this time?
Well, I hope you've been to the zoo during this time, and that makes it a little bit easier to answer. But, you know, in terms of the physical facility, we've made a lot of improvements. We've changed the front gate. We've moved the rhinos from one place to another. We have just recently upgraded the snack bar. We've done a fabulous new education facility, which is LEED Platinum. So it is the greenest building it can possibly be. So we've made kind of constant improvements with that. But at the same time, I would like to think that we've made some great improvements in guest services. Our zookeepers, you know, back when I was a zookeeper in 1973, and granted, that was really the very beginning of having women in zookeeping careers, we mostly fed and cleaned up after
That's
the animals.
Right, yeah.
And it is so different now. Our zookeepers do what we call enrichment. And they provide opportunities for the animals to explore their environment and to really, well, I don't know if I want to say think about, but to really use all their sensory abilities. And they also do a lot of on-site training to allow us to do medical procedures without having to tranquilize the animals. But we are able then to engage our guests in some of that activity. And to me, that's what's so exciting about the
career. Well, in fact,
right
my
now.
Daughter and her Girl Scout troop went down and had the experience with the giraffes. And the photographs of these girls standing there, holding their hands out at arm's length as these giant tongues came and wrapped around their arms to grab up the food. I mean, it's an experience now at 13 that she will never forget.
And that's exactly what we want. When we did our master plan several years ago, we really involved our whole staff. And one of the questions we asked each other is, why are you working here? What made you want to be involved with the zoo or this career? And really, to a person, we all had a moment where we connected. And for me, I grew up on the East Coast and went to the Philadelphia Zoo when I was a child. And there was a keeper in their children's zoo that really engaged me and said, oh, look what you can do with this llama. You can tickle its throat and it will love that. And the llama did. And I left the cage and the llama jumped out after me. That was a moment that I will never forget, and I want to share that kind of experience with other
people.
And
then here you were after your college experience getting to work at the granddaddy of granddaddies, the Bronx Zoo.
How lucky was that?
No kidding. I mean, when you went and tell me about that, you applied for that job. Was this the, oh, gee, I wish and dream?
You know, it wasn't because, you know, when I went to college, really women were not zookeepers. Women were nurses and teachers and maybe stewardesses if they were really adventurous. And I got to the Bronx Zoo through a mistake. And I'll be really personal here. I was married once before. And when that marriage didn't work out, that first husband actually was involved in a small zoo in Western Maryland. When that marriage didn't work out, I thought, what do I want to do now? What am I going to do? I can't just crawl home and live with mom and dad. So because I had had some connection with another small zoo, I was able to get an interview at the Bronx Zoo. And I totally felt like the luckiest person in the world.
And then the progression of things, I think I just heard a circling back, and that was that impact as a child that you felt with that llama, you were able to segue then into the educational children's programs then at the Bronx Zoo.
Absolutely. I worked at the children's zoo. While I was there, we designed and built a brand new children's zoo that incorporated a lot of that experiential learning, where children could touch and feel or try some of the same physical things that the animals were doing. So it was an exciting time.
Yeah, and was the Bronx Zoo at that time really leading the field in terms of changing that experiential thing, or was it kind of?
Well, I'd like to say so.
So that's right. I know it was part of it.
It certainly was one of the first children's zoos that had that component.
But you know, not unlike our two guests before us, the Andersons, though, it sounds like you pulled the plug though somewhere in the mix here and went from the Bronx Zoo to turtles in the islands.
I did, and I really loved hearing your last guest because. For me, it's all about taking chances. And after a few years at the Bronx Zoo, I found a life partner. And I was, again, extremely lucky. And he had been at the Bronx Zoo for 25 years. I had been there for 13. So we were, to say the least, invested in that career.
Yeah.
But we had an opportunity to do leatherback sea turtle research in St. Croix. And really, every year since we had been married, we, on New Year's Eve, toasted each other and said to taking chances.
Okay.
And we had always said, we don't want to regret not doing something. Better to be sorry that we took a chance and did something,
right.
But let's not look back and say, what if we had not done that, or what if we had done that?
So to go from the frenzy of Manhattan and New York and Long Island and your own East Coast background, and to say, well, first off, why turtles?
I mean, my husband's a herpetologist.
There you go. That comes
that's
easy.
That's an easy answer.
One. Right, right.
And we had had an opportunity the year before to go to Costa Rica and to volunteer on a sea turtle project there. It was green sea turtles. They're smaller than leatherbacks. And quite honestly, I was terrible at it. I was terrible. I have little to no night vision, and you do your work at night. The sands are black in Costa Rica. And I fell down all the time. So it wasn't an auspicious beginning to a career in sea turtle work. But I was also working on my graduate degree in Fordham and doing a paper on sea turtles and had just read something about leatherback sea turtles. And when Bob came to pick me up to go home that night, I said, we need to figure out a way to go see leatherback sea turtles. And he had a want ad in his hand.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's just bizarre. From a professional journal that said, we are looking for researchers to come to St. Croix and study leatherbacks.
That's not, you know, to me, that's God's way of acting anonymously, that he put those both in your path at the same time.
I know, it's amazing.
And that you had the space to allow that conversation to happen.
I know, it was amazing. So before we even thought about it, I went home, wrote a letter, sent our resumes, threw it in the mail and forgot it. And the next thing I knew, we had an invitation to go to St. Croix for 2 weeks to see what the project was about. It wasn't a brand new project. Mm-hmm. And for them to see us. And we said, here's our chance to see leatherbacks without a thought in the world of quitting our jobs and going there to stay. And after the first week, they said, well, we're not going to interview anybody else if you're really interested in this. And of course, that was a, oh my gosh, moment.
Right.
And we looked at each other and said, well, we have to do this.
We have to do this.
We
That's
have
right.
To. Yeah.
And I'm sure you got some of the, what, are you too crazy?
Oh, my gosh.
From everybody that you know, let alone your colleagues at the Bronx Zoo.
Well, and my father was a child of the Depression, and he was horrified that we were giving up, you know, well-paying for the time, jobs, pensions,
right.
The whole thing. And it wasn't a hard decision for us to make, but it was a hard decision for me to justify to my parents.
Yeah, which oftentimes is our biggest challenge in our careers, regardless of where we are, is satisfying the shoulds and shouldn'ts that come from all the people that have made us who we are today, but
That's
yet
right.
that we know at some point we got to get out of the nest and, you know, go in a different way.
Absolutely.
Well, so 5 years then in the Virgin Islands and then Tucson, and I'm getting a sense that's because we have great snakes and lizards here for Bob, right?
You are exactly
Aha.
right.
Aha.
When we, we're not totally crazy. So when we went to St. Croix, we said, when we have to start dipping into our savings to make do, we will look for real jobs. And not that we didn't, we worked incredibly hard there, but real stateside jobs. And Bob said, well, let's just move to Tucson. And because he's a bit more of a free spirit than I am. And I said, no, one of us has to have a job. But again, there was essentially a one ad saying, we're looking for an education curator at the Reed Park Zoo.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I had never seen the Reed Park Zoo, had really never been to Tucson, and said, well, all right. They have, 13 species of rattlesnakes. That was all Bob needed to know. And got an invitation to come and apply for the job and interview, and here I am.
And, some might say, well, gee, Susan, you went from the granddaddy Bronx Zoo to this little zoo here. But again, I can speak on behalf of my family. And, from the eyes of children, you don't need a Bronx Zoo to have the real rich animal experience. And in some ways, being able to go to a place that has 3 to 5 giraffes and 2 rhinos and ostriches, and oh, by the way, there's the reptile house and so on, and be able to do it in a couple hours, actually, that's probably a dream for every parent who otherwise would be carrying their child through the Bronx Zoo.
Well, and I agree with that. I've been to the Bronx Zoo many, many times. Yeah. 262 acres. It's huge.
Yeah, right.
And the San Diego Zoo, a fabulous zoo, both of them. But you do see children who are 3 and 4 years old by the early afternoon shrieking with sort of sensory overload.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those zoos are pricey enough, and have to be. I'm not saying they're overpriced, that you want to spend the whole day. If you're going to spend that much money, you're going to be there for the day. I think that Reed Park is a remarkable bargain, and how fabulous to be able to come for an hour and a half or just drop by and see the polar bears.
That's right.
And then leave again.
Polar bear in Tucson when it's 108 degrees.
I know. It doesn't really make intuitive sense, does it?
But then we see that, I know one of the experiences of what, I think you take a melon and then you hide a former live critter in the middle of it, freeze it, and that's his toy for the afternoon.
Well, we do a lot of enrichment with ice for sure, but also his fur works just like an evaporative cooler. So he and she are in and out of the pool as that water evaporates, it cools them down. So they do actually very well, probably better in Tucson with our dry air than they might in a southeastern city with really hot, humid air.
Mm-hmm. During the time you've been here now for 15 years, what have been some of the new animals that have joined the flock or the herd or the pride?
Well, and I'm not sure everybody agrees with this, but one of my favorite new species that we have is our warty pigs.
Oh, is that right?
And I don't know whether people notice them or not, but they are highly endangered. They're quite personable. Our zookeepers work with them and have a whole training program, and they're about cute as buttons. Really nice.
That's right.
We now have a young king vulture. We've had king vultures in our collection for quite a long time. But this youngster has been hand-raised, and we do free flight programs with him on a pretty regularly scheduled basis so that when guests come to the zoo, they can look at a board when they first walk in and see what's scheduled for that day. He's a fabulous animal and really fun to see, and certainly fun for the keepers to work with.
And how many elephants do you have now?
We have 2 right now. We have an African and an Asian, but we've recently, finally, figured out how we're funding our zoo expansion. It's a 7-acre expansion devoted primarily to elephants, and we'll be getting additional animals in from the San Diego Zoo. So we're very, very excited about that possibility.
And is that typical that different zoos support each other and transfer and share, put on loan, like art exhibits, so to speak?
Yeah, very, very typical. Zoos are really fun to work with because they're not competitive. I mean, for the most part, there's not 2 zoos in any one city. So we don't compete with each other. We work very collaboratively. And sharing animals is really part of a whole scientific process of online dating, if you will, so that we can match animals up according to their genetic background for the best possible match.
Susan, I don't have a perspective on this. How many zoos are there in the country?
There are probably well over 1,500 zoos, but only 210 are what we call accredited. We have a professional organization, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and they have an accreditation process, and it is, I might say, very extensive and very exhausting to go through.
And has the Reed Park Zoo been accredited?
We have, yeah. And we have been consistently accredited for many, many years now. But every 5 years, a team of peers comes to the zoo and looks at everything. They can look at our record keeping. They look at our housekeeping. They look at our education programs, our financial situation, everything, and then present a report.
Now, I know we mentioned that the zoo is part of the city of Tucson.
That's correct.
And at the same time, though, you have a very strong benefactor and donor base as well. Tell us about
that.
We
do. We have a great support organization, formerly known as the Tucson Zoological Society, now the Reed Park Zoological Society. So I'm liable to get it wrong when I talk about them because it is a very new name change. But they are a huge supporter. They've been around for many years, but really have matured as a fundraising support and as a community, sort of community active kind of support organization. And they're fabulous. They have, in fact, raised a significant portion of money for this latest process or project,
the seven acre expansion,
as well as the Conservation Learning Center.
What's that about, the Conservation Learning Center?
That is the LEED Platinum building that
yes.
we have completed a couple years ago now, and it is oh so green and sustainable. it's a fabulous building, and it's beautiful, and it's comfortable, and that's exactly what we wanted to accomplish. We are a conservation organization. We wanted to be able to demonstrate that conservation ethic to our guests.
Yep. Now, a number of our listeners, of course, are not from Tucson. We're mm-hmm. here live on the web, and people tap our podcast from hither and non. So you might want to give a perspective that the zoo is very centrally located and amongst other important things for our community.
We are. We're right in the middle of town. We are in a large, very green park, Reed Park, and next to two golf courses, Randolph Golf Courses, now known as Del Urich and Randolph North. And we're just kind of stuck in the middle there. And the park is extraordinarily well used. I think every inch of the park has its own constituency. Mm-hmm. There is an outdoor performance center with that there's almost always something going on there. There's a professional baseball stadium, just a lot happening. But the zoo is kind of right in the middle.
So that 7 acre expansion suddenly dawns on me, where'd the acreage come from?
Well,
you're not landlocked then?
This is probably our only opportunity to expand, and we'll be taking the zoo from its current footprint south to 22nd Street. So we'll be sort of filling in that last little block of space.
And so it's going to be, you said, for elephants.
That's correct.
What else will come into play then?
Well, to start with, it really will be just elephants. There's some financial considerations,
as always. And may I ask, have elephants always been a big draw? Is that why elephant became the anchor for this?
Or? Elephants are a big draw, but they're also very important in the zoo community. And not every zoo can manage elephants. Not every zoo has the space. Not every zoo has the financial wherewithal to be able to create an exhibit like this, or the climate that is so appropriate for these animals.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the education programs, you're also, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, your title, the education curator prior to that, and that was obviously high on your list of things and aspirations when you were back involved in the Bronx Zoo. What type of programs are then available?
Oh my gosh. Well, the education group is, as we speak, doing the birthday party for the Tigers, but for the past week or several weeks and then on in through July, they're doing zoo camp. So that's a very popular program.
Zoo camp?
Oh my gosh. It's an all-day camp and a couple sessions a day, and the kids explore the zoo. They go behind the scenes. They see our kitchen. They help clean up the giraffe barn, which is always popular.
That's right.
We have a pool across the street from the zoo, so they even get to go swimming. Really, since we've had our new education building, is the first time we've been able to do all-day camps in the summer, because we have a place to get them out of the heat.
That's right.
So that's great. We do overnight campouts, which
great.
Is really fun.
As you think about your role then as the director, and I gather because you've also, this is not an administrative job for you, but rather you're the steward of this great enterprise and a lover at heart of wanting to be right there with the animals. How have you seen your role, though, evolve over time, particularly at tough times like these when you're doing capital funds drives and buildings and staff turnover and so on?
Well, that's a great question, because I would venture to say that in the 70s and 80s when people became zookeepers, they made that choice because they felt that they were better with animals than with people. Mm-hmm. And I did. I taught school for a couple years and was not good at it. And so I certainly have seen a demand for the ability to get along with people and to connect with people. The capital campaign piece, I have learned how to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that really is challenging for me. I have learned that this facility and these projects are so important that it's important to invite people to help. And they want to. And that was a hard lesson for me.
Well, also just because asking people for money is a sales job.
That's right.
And it isn't necessarily you being the researcher that, even though you were tripping over the dark, you know, working with sea turtles, it puts you in a whole different place. And as we would talk about on this show, it's pulling upon different gifts that you have or may not have, right?
Well,
and how
and
you
that's
learn to
right.
lean on others.
That's yeah. right.
Yeah.
So we have a fabulous development director as part of the society. And oh my gosh, is she gifted at that very thing, fundraising and talking to people about the importance of being able to support something in the community and to leave a legacy. And so I've learned a whole new vocabulary from her.
Isn't that lovely? You know, there is something, though, about animals. There always is. I mean, whether we talk about Dr. Randy Aronson, our radio pet vet here, or, you know, I shared with you that my son just sold his Wii system so he could get a second lizard. So a bearded dragon
fabulous.
Lizard. Yeah, and he's 15. And for us to watch that little guy who's, you know, like 2 inches going on his way to, what, 24 inches, I'm told, that whole process of having animals involved in your family life or your personal life is not to be overlooked.
It really is, and I think it's so essential. I have just recently read that children today are spending, you know, between 4 and 7 minutes outside. That's
yeah,
it's
a frightening thought.
That's so scary to me. I mean, why will people want to protect the environment? Why will people want to protect or save endangered species if they don't have that connection? And for me, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Well, your experience of stroking that llama's throat and him trying to follow you out of the zoo, can you think of experiences or have you had feedback come back to you of some of the youth you've touched? I mean, are there other zoological aspirants in their wake from whether it be the Reed Park Zoo or perhaps you're working with some young people?
Let me tell you my very favorite story. And that is, I got a postcard from a woman that had been to visit the zoo with her 2 youngsters, and she had seen the elephants, and we really work hard with those animals. We have keepers that are in there working with them, and she said, "Thank you so much for sharing Connie and Chaba," that's the name of the elephants. "My children didn't believe elephants were real they came to the zoo." And, you know, that just choked me up. And it's really my favorite story.
Well, and I think probably the lesson for mom here, too, is it wasn't just that visit to the zoo, but now her looking for other real experiences
exactly.
to expose her children.
Exactly.
There's a whole ripple effect here about what we wanted to give back our youth and, mm-hmm. and what those animals in that setting can give back to us.
I think it's special.
So how can the community help you right now? You've got your capital funds drive. I'm certain it's
There's continued. Never an end.
Never an end. So how might they touch in?
Never an end. We have a great website. It's called TucsonZoo.org. So people can log on to that. They can see all the special events coming up. There are certainly ways to donate right there. If they want to talk to our development director, who is more than happy to talk to pretty much anybody.
That's right.
The number is 881-4753. And there's lots of ways you can help. But come to the zoo and see us.
That's very good. Well, Susan Bassford from the Reed Park Zoo here in Tucson, thanks so much. And we'll watch for your continuing, whether it's going to be who knows what's next, but we're really glad you're here in Tucson.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Our pleasure. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.